of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and we're here today to do work session on a number of bills, on public hearing on a number of bills. House Bill 3537, I'm canceling the work session today, so we'll be opening a work session on House Bill 2162. Mr. Fletcher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2162 extends the sunset on funding of the Department of Forestry administrative expense in connection with the reforestation tax credit and the Western Oregon small tract option to July 1st, 2003. The bill adds a work group of six members representing specific interests to review state tax policy affecting forest land and small ownerships, and provides $50,000 general fund for this purpose, and the fiscal on the back of your sheet there shows a $50,000 general fund expenditure. However, this $50,000 will be reimbursed from Western Oregon Timber Tax Account and Eastern Oregon Timber Tax Account within the 2001-03 biennium, so essentially the net effect to general fund is zero. So in summary, LFO recommends approval of 2162A with the understanding that the general fund appropriation of $50,000 will be reimbursed within the 2001-03 biennium from the Western Oregon Timber Tax Account and the Eastern Oregon Timber Tax Account. LFO also recommends that the budget report reflect this revenue transfer to ensure that the additional revenue is counted towards the general fund.
Questions or comments for Mr. Fletcher on LFO's recommendation? Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, I move the acceptance of the LFO recommendation.
There is a motion on the table to recommend LFO's recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is passed. Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, I would move the bill to full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Motion on the table to move the bill to full with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is passed. Now close the work session on House Bill 2162. What's that? Oh, carriers. I'll carry the bill in full. Representative Krieger, would you carry the bill on the House floor?
Can.
And Senator Farioli, would you carry the bill on the Senate floor?
Yes, ma'am.
And I will open a work session on House Bill 2200. Mr. Rocco.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2200 was heard yesterday in committee. I've passed out the same material you had yesterday in case you didn't bring it back with you. Once again, this is the forestry carbon offset bill, which allows the state forester to set up a program to market and sell carbon offsets. The LFO's recommendation is to approve the bill as is. There is a fiscal impact to the bill, but the agency is able to accommodate that within its base budget. I think this bill had hearing yesterday. We've received one additional piece of testimony that the chair has agreed to pass out from the American Land Alliance, which I'll provide to the committee.
Are there any questions? questions for Mr. Rocco on LFO's recommendation?
Madam Chair?
Senator Dukes?
And is there anything in the bill that requires the Department of Forestry to consult with other agencies involved in air, clean air?
Madam Chair, Senator Dukes, that was a topic of conversation yesterday. Senator Farioli raised the issue of how there doesn't seem to be a coordinated approach towards mitigation banking in the state, and there's nothing in the bill that would require them to do that, as far as I'm aware, but you may want to ask the agency that.
Chair, I know that to make any changes is becoming more difficult in this process, and I don't know what your plans are, but it seems to me it would be nice to do that. This is an agency that I would expect would probably do that as a matter of course, but I think that it would help allay some people's concerns if we could simply say that they needed to do that. However,
Madam Chair.
Representative Hayden.
Senator Dukes, yesterday we had several graphic demonstrations on this, and I'm in full support of this bill. He had Legos that demonstrated, and he gave us the example, addressing your question, he gave us the example of when he was a child, he would do rock salt castles, you know, and he made the illustration that if you put one string in, boom, everything crystallizes. So I think you start somewhere.
And I think also, Senator Dukes, from the conversations that are on the record from yesterday, it's very clear that there is a strong expectation that the agency consult and cooperate with other agencies. Is there any further question or comment on Mr. Rocco's presentation? Representative Hanson.
Madam Chair, I'd move House Bill 2200 to full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
We have a motion on the table to move House Bill 2200 to full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objections to the motion? Without objection, the motion passes. Representative Nolan, would you carry this bill on the House floor?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair. Thank you.
I'll carry the bill in full, and Senator Dukes, would you carry the bill on the Senate floor? Thank you. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2200, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3956. Mr. Rocco.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3956 requires the Department of Environmental Quality to develop and implement pollutant reduction trading program. I'm having passed out to you a memo with LFO's recommendation, with some proposed amendments to the bill. Fiscal impact on those proposed amendments, staff measure summary from the House Committee on Water and Environment, and the tenor of the amendments basically are that in the bill there's an appropriation of general fund as a match for federal funds that are anticipated to be received to implement this program. According to the latest information from the agency, they're proposing a grant proposal now to EPA, which would does not require a general fund match. So the recommendation to amend the bill basically would just remove that general fund component of the bill.
Questions for Mr. Rocco on LFO's presentation? Do we have anyone signed up to testify on the bill? Mr. Morello looks like a likely suspect over there. Please. Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mike Llewellyn, Administrator of the Water Quality Division with DEQ. We're in support of House Bill 3956, And Mr. Rocco's correct that EPA has approximately $200,000 that they would like to direct to the state of Oregon to put together an effluent trading program. It does not require a state match or appropriation from the state. So I'd be glad to answer any specific questions you have on our proposed grant application or effluent trading in general.
Could you give us kind of the 30,000-foot view of the way what the program will do, what it'll accomplish, and how it'll be wired together?
Certainly, Madam Chair. The concept of effluent trading has been around for about 20 years, but it still admittedly is rather academic. It's not built into the day-to-day operation of the Clean Water Act. And essentially, what effluent trading allows is if a permitted source gets an effluent limit that might drive an increased cost for treatment, rather than having to build treatment at that specific facility, effluent trading would allow them to look on sort of a market-based approach to see if there's a more cost-effective solution, perhaps by buying capacity from another facility on that same stream or watershed that has excess capacity at a lower cost. What this program needs is some sideboards and directions for folks who are interested in pursuing trades to understand how to do that contractually, what their NPDES permit would look like, how to translate a trade of pollution from one source to another, what I'd call the metrics of trading. We have some opportunities in Oregon because of the TMDL program, where examples on the recently are on the Tualatin River. TMDL has just been approved, so there's a lot of interest among some of the parties in the Tualatin Basin at looking at trading. What we need to do is sit down with interested folks and help them through that process, and then perhaps using that as some trades as a model, build a more permanent structure for the whole state if people are interested in the long term.
So this sounds somewhat like a carbon offset program, but for water situations or air situations.
Madam Chair, that's correct. It's very similar in concept.
Representative Nolan.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just want to clarify and either direct this question to Mr. Llewellyn or to Mr. Rocco. Does our approval of this bill constitute approval to make this application, this grant application, or does the department need to come back for a separate approval to make the grant application?
Madam Chair, it would be my interpretation that this would, based on the fiscal impact, this would give the agency the authority to go apply for the grant.
Sounds great. Sounds like a wonderful idea.
Any further questions or comments for Mr. Llewellyn? Representative Krieger.
Madam Chair, maybe a crush of maybe people from the environmental community, and I would have an interest, is you have a certain amount of effluent going, or air, whatever it might be. Is this going to change by increasing the amount allowed? Is it going to decrease it, or is it going to be like an offset? What is the end result to a river?
Madam Chair, Representative Krieger, the bottom line is that water quality standards still must be met. This does not trade allowing one river to remain polluted to offset another basin. The bottom line is water quality standards must be met. It's just a mechanism to allow for a more, what I would characterize as a market-driven approach to see if there's more cost-effective solutions to meeting those water quality standards.
Thank you.
Further comments or questions for Mr. Llewellyn? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll call State Representative Betsy Close. Good morning, Representative Close. Thank you for being here with us today.
Good morning, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. I have some written testimony, but I'm not going to give it because I imagine you're under a time constraint and you've already had the introduction of the bill. But I would just like to say that it was very interesting to be involved in this. The Water Committee actually took a field trip to a golf course up in West Lynn where they're taking water out of the Willamette River and using it for irrigation, running it through their settling ponds over waterfalls, and then they're returning it to the Willamette River cleaner than when they took it out. And so the grass is removing the phosphates and the nitrates, I believe it was. And so it's a fascinating concept that I'm really looking forward to seeing work in Oregon.
Questions or comments for Representative Close? Representative, would you be willing to carry the bill on the House floor?
Glad to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I call John Ledger from Associated Oregon Industries.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning. I'm John Ledger with AOI. I just wanted to say briefly we're in strong support of this bill. Effluent trading has been done in air for some years. As a matter of fact, you can buy a ton of SO2 on the Chicago Stock Exchange, where the credits are actually traded. You can buy it and hold on to it and speculate, or you could buy a ton of SO2 credit from the stock exchange and give it as an anniversary present or something like that. But it's very interesting. One of the questions that came up earlier was, how does this affect the river? And one of the really good things about this is that when you do a trade under this bill, there has to be a net decrease in overall pollution. So you don't really trade pound for pound. You trade pound for a reduction of a pound for more than a reduction of a pound. And the amount actually would get set by the DEQ. So the net result is the more trades you have, the cleaner the river will be. And what it does is it makes decreasing pollution a commodity, something to be done because it's valuable. I did pass out to you a little handout. You should have it. I don't seem to have mine in front of me. It has a little fish at the bottom, and it kind of gives it a very simplified example trade. But it shows that one party saves money, another party makes money, and the river is cleaner as a result. The other thing is EPA is a strong proponent of trading, and I did also give to you DEQ policy that says that they believe this is beneficial to the environment. So we would strongly recommend this bill come.
Questions or comments for Mr. Ledger? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I call Willie Tiffany.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities, and since this bill has already been assigned a carrier, I'll be very, very brief and stay in line with the comments that you've heard already. League of Oregon Cities does strongly support House Bill 3956, and as was stated earlier, the implementation of TMDLs really kind of spurs this issue along, looking for cost-benefit analysis on pollutant trades. This bill will implement or allow DEQ to implement that sort of program, which will be very, very helpful, not only for the environment, but for dischargers across the state. So with that, happy to answer any questions.
Questions or comments for Mr. Tiffany? Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3956. Is she out there?
No.
Trolling for senators.
Madam Chair, while we're waiting, now I understand the concept very well. It's similar to my E-Trade account. Each time I make a trade, I clean a little more out of my bank account.
It's a minus.
Very similar.
It sounds about right on a day
and
like
somebody today. Makes money, but it's not necessarily you.
And I will open a work session on House Bill 3956. Mr. Rocco.
Madam Chair, as our cover memo described, we're recommending amending the bill on page 2, line 14, where it says the department shall obtain a minimum of $200,000. We're recommending replacing obtain with seek. And the department has a grant proposal already prepared and ready to be submitted for that amount of money. We're recommending deleting lines 20 through 26, and this is the section that provides the general fund appropriation match, and then changing in line 27, changing section 5 to section 4.
Questions or comments on Mr. Rocco's presentation or LFO's recommendation?
Stall.
Do you have any more comments on trading account?
Can we do the Lego thing again?
About maybe golf scores, since we talked about a golf course, we could.
I would like Representative Hansen to relate it to remodeling a kitchen.
I can't do that.
And maybe give Mr. Ledger marriage advice if he gives his wife sulfur dioxide credits for an anniversary gift. He may need to remodel his kitchen.
His wife is listening in. She should know a good gift.
Madam Chair, I could read the grant request into the record if you'd like. Slowly.
Yeah, I just lay and read slow.
How about if we read out of the telephone book?
Here we go.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, I would move the LFO recommendation and amendments.
Should we first move the amendments into the bill?
Yeah, move the amendments into the bill.
We have a motion on the table to move LFO's recommended amendments into House Bill 3956A. Is there any discussion on the motion? Is there any objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is passed. Representative Hansen.
We move to accept LFO's recommendation.
We have a motion on the table to accept LFO's recommendations on House Bill 3956A. Is there discussion on that motion? Is there objection to that motion? Without objection, the motion is passed. Representative Hansen.
I would move 3956A to the full Committee of Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation.
We have a motion on the table to move House Bill 3956A as amended to full Ways and Means with a due pass. Comments or comments on the motion?
And we don't have the E-Trade stuff in this bill, right?
E-trade stuff?
No, E-trade.
E-trade, no, that is
okay, all right. Just wanted to make sure. I didn't want Representative Hansen to be disappointed.
Are there any objections to the motion? Without objection, the motion passes, and I close the work session on House Bill 3956 and open, carriers. We have this all figured out. On the floor, Representative Close, I'll carry it in full, and if Senator Farioli would be kind enough to consent to carry it on the Senate floor. I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3948 and call Ms. Byerly forward to do your presentation.
Good morning, it's Chair Morgan, members of the subcommittee. In front of you, you should see a staff measure summary and a copy of the bill. This bill creates the Sustainability Board, and it also creates an Institute for Natural Resources at Oregon State University. The fiscal impact statement, which is the following page, is based upon one potential scenario for staffing of the board. I've been working with Chair Morgan and proponents of the bill and talking about what the fiscal impact of the Sustainability Board would be and looking at some various options. The Institute at Oregon State University would be a program that was funded through contract and grant monies, and as such would be an other fund, non-limited type of program. The university has indicated they would not start working on that program until they had begun receiving grant monies. So in terms of fiscal impact, that piece of the bill doesn't really have any problem at this time. On page 2 of the handout, it says House Bill 3978 Sustainability Board, and there's some options here in terms of staffing. The bill directs the board to hire a director, and we've been talking about what kind of a level, salary level that person might be at. Some of the boards in the state agencies have directors at executive officer level, which is a salary range 23. Other boards have a variety of classifications that direct the boards. Sometimes they're principal exec managers. One possible scenario that we discussed for the board was for part of the administrative support for the board to be handled by the Department of Administrative Services. Scenario 2 kind of shows what DAS had suggested as possible staffing or funding level for the board. We also talked about whether or not board members should receive per diem and expenses. Is that something that has a fiscal impact on the operations of the board? There's a couple other scenarios there. Scenario 1, it shows a phase-in date of July 2002 for the director of the board. And scenario three shows a phase-in date of January 2002 for the director of the board. The bill would be in effect January 1, 2002 because it does not have an emergency clause or any other kind of a date within it. Other than that, I don't have any recommendations at this point. I was hoping we could discuss potential funding over the board and try to come to some kind of conclusions about what the potential general fund impact might be so we could finalize a fiscal impact statement. And I believe that.
Questions or comments from Ms. Byerly?
Madam Chairman, I have a question. It's a substantive issue, not a fiscal issue. We've recently experienced some difficulty with a different state agency over the chain of command and the responsiveness of the director to the board of commissioners or the directorship and the interface with the legislative assembly. And I'm wondering if it isn't appropriate for us to direct some mechanism by which the new director has to seek approval through the Senate in order for confirmation on this newly formed sustainability board. The reason I suggest that, and I realize that is a substantive issue, not a fiscal issue, is that sustainability can mean different things to different people. And it is certain to be an issue that can be viewed from at least two and maybe many different perspectives. For instance, sustaining a community in a rural landscape that's dependent on agriculture may require a whole set of strategies. Sustaining a community's well-being by maintaining open space and recreational opportunities may mean a whole different set of priorities and issues that need to be discussed, yet both fit conveniently into the definition of sustainability. And I believe that the selection of this director will set the tone for whether or not sustainability is defined broadly enough to serve the interests of rural and urban, east, west, and all Oregonians, or whether it'll be a philosophical question that may be answered upon the appointment of the director in a particular direction. So I guess I would just ask other members of the committee and the chairman for their feeling about whether or not this ought to be an element of the creation of this new board.
Senator, I think your point is very well taken and your suggestion is excellent. And we are only doing a public hearing on the bill today because we are awaiting amendments to the bill, and I would be very pleased to entertain that amendment.
May I ask, Madam Chairman, will this bill be substantively amended in a different committee, or would this committee send a bill forward with amendments that could contain such a recommendation?
The bill has already been to a substantive committee on the House side, so we have the ability to amend the bill in this committee and send it forward, whereupon it would pass the House floor and then go for scrutiny on the Senate side.
Who, Madam Chair, if I could inquire, who is bringing the amendment?
Senator Dukes.
Thank you. I will consult with Senator Dukes on my concern, and perhaps we can add a clause into her amendments, or maybe I will bring them in. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Krieger, did you have a question or a comment?
I did. It's been taken care of.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
I guess I have a problem with the concept that we're dealing with here, in that I don't view a sustainability board as I view it and the Institute for Natural Resources as redundant. I think we are already engaged in substantive conversations at every level of state government in regards to sustainability. Whether it's with ODOT and creating roads that last for lifetimes, or whether it's ODF&W or Water Resources. Institute for Natural Resources, by what I see here, envisions conducting research, providing natural resources information, coordinating with the state agencies. We've been highly critical of the governor's office community solutions teams because they are to be an effort of coordinating agencies when many of us think that those agencies ought to be coordinating themselves. And I frankly see this again as a redundant issue. There are various organizations from NRCS to Extension Service that provide information on natural resources. There are many organizations that do research and coordinating with other state agencies. I guess I just don't see the burning need to have either one of these issues to be formalized in this process. And I understand there's no general fund money coming out of them, but I wonder if we're really accomplishing something here or if we're simply overlapping issues that are already being discussed in state government and in the university system. So I need persuaded that this is necessary.
I would hope that the people that are signed up to give testimony on the bill will bring forward the areas that will benefit from the activities of the three pieces of the bill. Representative Krieger, before we get public testimony, did you have comments?
Just very briefly, Chair Morgan. Similar to Representative Krupp, I've been on the Board of Forestry, and I know we struggle with sustainability. And it was a specific discipline as to forestry, but you can't do it without looking at water quality, air, and a whole host of other things. And I have some concern where this might be leading us, even though on, I think, page 3, there's some prohibitions what this commission cannot do about directing agencies. I want to hear some testimony before I can commit to this.
Okay. Are there any other comments or questions on the LFO presentation? Representative Hayden.
Well, to continue with the example that Representative Krieger advanced many years ago, we had the concept of sustainability as it relates to timber harvests, and we discussed sustained yield, sustainability. And at first we discussed it over the entire land base, the whole state of Oregon, the 30 million acres. And pretty soon there were only 25 million acres where we could harvest, and then 20 million acres, and then 10 million, and then 5 million. And pretty soon we're talking about sustainability on a very small portion of the whole, rather than the entire ecosystem, the entire universe. So my question, as it applies to forestry or to anything else, does sustainability mean across the whole spectrum, or is it a subset of some small portion of the state and with large areas set aside where this concept does not apply because it's not sustainability but preservation of the status quo?
And Madam Chair, I might add in concert with Representative Hayden that sustainability, as I'm reading this, seems to be slanted. This whole concept seems to be slanted towards natural resources, so maybe we ought to call this natural resources sustainability, even though it talks a little bit briefly in the language of the bill about economics. We're going to talk about the ability to sustain anything in this state for any length of time, whether it's natural resources. We ought to be including our policies in regards to economics, which means taxation and regulation. And I fear that is not the direction of this particular issue. And, you know, sustainability is a very broad term. And if we're going to narrowly focus this on natural resources, fine. Then let's call it what it is. But let's not masquerade it as something. And if we put all the focus on natural resources and don't put the focus on the other issues that are important for sustainability in this state that produce revenue to this state to spend either on programs like this, if they were to be funded out of the general fund, which they're not under this bill, or anything else, then that has to be part of the discussion.
Perhaps if we could bring Mr. Ledger and Ms. Vickerman forward to take us through the bill, we could clear up a lot of the questions that have surfaced from the members.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm John Ledger again with AOI, and I have Sarah Vickerman here with me with Defenders of Wildlife, and we are the I guess we're the couple that in the editorials say, refer to us as the odd couple, because it is a little bit of an odd matching. Let me tell you just briefly how this came about, because I think this, maybe we can kind of clear up some things here. This came about, frankly, because both Sarah and I, we were having lunch in Lake Oswego one day, actually, and we were kind of bemoaning the fact that there is a lot of stridency on environmental, economic, social issues. There's a lot of pitting, we think, environment against economy, that maybe, you know, we should be working to merge those two together because they actually help each other out. And we are also kind of bemoaning the fact that we have groups that are formed to solve problems, and it seems like about one-third of the people come to the group to get something done, one-third come to impose their agenda on everybody else, and one-third come to make sure that doesn't happen to them. And they either gridlock up, or they, you know, or they overlook things that could be done easily and quickly, kind of grappling with the bigger problems. And so we wanted to try something that, frankly, is a little bit of an experiment. And we came up with this idea, which I don't think has been tried anywhere else. And we called it the Sustainability Board, and we define sustainability in here, at linking essentially economy, social, and environmental issues. And if that isn't clear enough in the text, I think that's a good comment, that it may not be clear enough. And if it's not, that's something we would want to clarify in the text to make that clear. Because this is not supposed to be a board that looks at a command and control board. It's the exact opposite. What we were trying to do was come up with some mechanism that could go out and look at issues kind of on a case-by-case basis for whoever might request it. It could be an agency, could be local government, could be a business. But we'd go out when someone says, or someone brings a problem to them, whatever it might be, and say, here's a problem we have, or we want to look at how you get people out of their cars, or reduce use of mercury. You know, that's a big issue, reduce use of mercury. What's going on around the country that's voluntary, that is based on incentives, and that works? Take a look at it, see if you think it would work for Oregon, and bring it back and propose it. They have no regulatory authority. But what they do is they go out and they see what's being done on an incentive and voluntary basis. The idea being is you try to deal with things first through an incentive and voluntary basis. You give that a try. You look at that instead of kind of flipping over right into the regulatory side where it's sort of a bruising battle all the time. If you can't find anything or it doesn't work, nothing's been harmed. But this board would go out and they'd look around for whatever the problem is or whatever the issue is. They would go around, they'd look around the country to see what is being used as far as incentives. They'd come back and they'd make a proposal. Now the catch in this board that is different from other boards is that it can, and we did this on purpose, it can only propose what we define in here as positive incentives. So it cannot propose punishments as incentives. And the idea is then you have a board that people will not be frightened or suspicious of, that will grind to a halt. You have a board that people feel confident that if they come up with something, it's going to be something that's beneficial. So you actually have a board that can go out, maybe people actually bring things to the board, go out, pick off the problems, and come back with some ideas. The board has no authority to overrule any agency action, has no authority to impose anything on other boards. It's essentially a think tank. It's a think tank. But the idea is to try to, as the first shot at things, look at the positive incentives, the voluntary ways we can do things as the first shot. Because that's the way we would like regulatory stuff to go more and more. We're always going to have command and control that's appropriate. But what we'd like to do is start exploring somehow, you know, the general voluntary incentive-based systems. And we wanted to make sure that when we do this, when someone comes up with something, that it's clear we're looking at things that benefit the community, the economy, everybody at one time. And that is how we came up with this board. It's not going to pick off the huge problems like, you know, breaching dams or green taxes or this kind of thing. That's not what it's meant to do.
It's meant to go out and look for things that can be done quickly, things that will have high acceptance, because they're only going to come back with positive incentives. Put that in a package that's useful and move on. So that's, it's a little bit of an experiment. It's an experiment to try something positive and different.
Representative Hayden.
So we have this morning dealt with pollution credits and with carbon offsets. Is this something that such a board would be interested in?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I think that's a perfect example of the type of thing, if somebody said, how do we, you know, deal with this problem, that problem, and they'd go out and they'd look around to see what exists out there that's voluntary, that's an incentive, see what would work, and bring it back as a package. And I think something like effluent trading is an absolutely perfect example of the things that are out there, because nobody loses. There's no negative incentive in effluent trading, only positive incentives. And what we see is boards sometimes, or people getting together to look at a problem, and the first thing they come up with is a negative system, you know, a tax or a ban or a prohibition. And the thing grinds to a halt. And we're trying to experiment here on the positive side.
Senator Farioli.
Madam Chairman, thank you. I believe that the intention of this proposal is an excellent intention. I think the idea that Oregonians want sustainability in communities and in industry sectors and in natural processes, that's been at the very heart of discussions about the environment. This commission will have no regulatory authority and will be limited in scope to determining what positive incentives could be brought. That, I think, is also a good purpose. But I'm curious to know if the commission were to, without exercising any regulatory authority at all in its deliberations, determine a practice is unsustainable and publish that information due course of their deliberations about the issues of sustainability. What does Mr. Ledger or Ms. Vickerman think would be the result of in that sector or in that industry or in that practice if a commission with the color of authority of the state and a charge from the legislature and assistance by scientists and advisors were to declare a practice unsustainable?
Would you care to?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, that would be entire, if looking at the bill, that would be entirely out of the scope of the charge of the bill. So if they were to do that, it would be the same as any other committee operating outside its charge. When you look at the charge to the Sustainability Board, it says, shall identify, evaluate, and propose incentives and the removal of negative incentives for purposes of encouraging activities that best sustain, protect, and enhance the quality of the environment, economy, and community. That's its function. So I don't, Senator, I don't see that really as being within the charge of the board. And I think the spirit of the, I think it would be contrary to what I believe the spirit of the board would be.
Madam Chairman, just a quick follow-up.
I
appreciate Mr. Ledger's commentary. I think the clear intent is to do something positive to identify those strategies that might lead to better returns for Oregonians or better conservation of energy or resources, but by the by exclusion and inference, I think people are going to conclude that these improvements are aimed at eliminating unsustainability or improving the aspects of sustainability. But at some point in time, there has to be a comparative analysis done on what is and what is not a sustainable practice, or whether or not practices are deficient, therefore unsustainable, and need to be changed. And so I don't know how you can have the yin without the yang. So maybe that could be explained as well.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli,
I think we're giving a little bit too broad scope to this board. The board is, what we're trying to do is create a think tank to go out there and find things like effluent trading. And I don't see this, and they have to report back to the legislature. So the legislature will get reports back. They have to be confirmed by the Senate. I don't see that with being within the spirit or scope of the board. I mean, the intent here, and part of it's the word sustainability, frankly. And we couldn't come up with a better one. But the intent is to look at finding, and we wrote it as clearly as we could, you know, positive projects going down the positive side to try to maybe reduce our dependence on the regulatory aspect so much. And I think that would be the tenor of the board. I don't see the board saying, this is an unsustainable practice, we need to stop doing this. I see the board saying things like, hey, how do we deal with water quality in a way that's going to encourage people to try some alternate practices?
Madam Chairman, I appreciate the commentary. You're talking to a person who chaired three sessions ago the Livability Committee. People still, and I do not, know what the hell that meant or means. I got a lot of bills, some of them relating to electrical contracting practices, nothing to do with livability, far like it. But I think the idea of sustainability could have at its core a model for a program that we operated very successfully in Oregon called the BiOregon program, which simply connected local suppliers with local purchasers of products and services available from Oregonians. And that markedly increased the internal recirculation of dollars in the service sector, and it made a lot of money for a lot of people, and it was a great program, increased efficiencies and return on investment far beyond just what it would have been without that kind of an incentive. If that's the model that we're looking at for sustainability, I think we're really on to something. If, in fact, we can also look a little more ecologically at whole communities, how communities exist on a landscape and interact with the natural resource environment, you could be onto something there as well. But eventually, I wonder that this doesn't devolve into something like a credentials commission who looks at practices and is forced to make value judgments about sustainability, and somebody loses in that equation. I don't hear an acknowledgement that there's a problem that's potential unless this sustainability concept's well defined and the mission of the sustainability board is clearly identified. And there's an attempt, I think, to do that, but I think we have to look at evolution over time. If we're going to do this for a long period of time, inevitably you get into comparisons. And that's my concern.
Ms. Vickerman, we haven't yet given you a chance to make your part of the presentation. We have questions from Representative Krieger and Representative Hayden. Would you gentlemen be willing to hold your questions until Ms. Vickerman makes her part of the presentation? Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Morgan, members of the committee. I'm Sarah Vickerman. I'm the director of the West Coast Office for Defenders of Wildlife. And we've had, as Senator Farioli has, extensive involvement in sustainability issues over the past 5 or 10 years, and are in support of this bill for a couple of very important reasons that address perhaps some of the questions about redundancy that came up earlier. One of the reasons is because there is an executive order that the governor signed on sustainability recently, but there hasn't been an expression on the part of the legislature that sustainability is important as a state policy, and this bill would certainly do that, and to define sustainability, which the bill does. The other thing that's important for this bill is the creation of the Institute for Natural Resources at Oregon State University. And in a lot of our experiences with natural resource issues, as Mr. Ledger said earlier, they're very contentious and very antagonistic. And sometimes that's the case because people from different ideological perspectives don't have access to reliable, integrated, informative, credible information about the natural resources and about the social conditions and the economic conditions that are the crux of these natural resource problems. And that the Institute for Natural Resources is intended to address those issues in a more holistic way, in an interdisciplinary way, so that the information about the economics, about the environment, and about the social issues are brought together in a way that is more informative to the policy community, to yourselves and to others concerned with policy issues. And having been on a number of these boards, which some of them work and some of them don't, a couple of them in the sustainability field have been, I think, notoriously ineffective. So I think this is an interesting approach to making a board that is more effective, to narrow the scope of its interest to those things which are positive and which are not terribly contentious, where the board can actually demonstrate some progress. And especially if it doesn't start up until halfway through the biennium, it's not likely that it's going to go off course, and because it'll want to come back to the legislature with something tangible and concrete and demonstrate some evidence of its utility. So I appreciate your fears, Senator Farioli, that it'll go off identifying unsustainable practices, but I think under the circumstances that's extremely unlikely, and if that were the case, the legislature could always get rid of it.
Well, Madam Chair, yeah.
Well, wait just a minute. Representative Krieger, you were next.
Well, earlier I just had written down that some of the conversation I looked at, there might be a lack of people and economics in the equation. Similar to that, we're finding there's a lack of economics and people in the ESA and how it supersedes every other thought. And then where Senator Farioli came from a minute ago about there being no regulatory authority, and that's talked about in Section 3 on page 3. But at the same time, it would be similar to me. My experience would be with the independent multidisciplinary team doesn't have any authority, suggestive. But when you don't follow what they say, you're accused of doing something wrong. Well, my experience with that group is that, first of all, they are not able to take out their own bias of what science is, so I get the opinion of a scientist instead of what the science is. And I think that's where we'll end up.
Did you want to address that comment?
Madam Chair, let me go back to the intent here, and it's certainly if someone on the because there are amendments coming in, as you know, and if somebody on the committee would like to work with us on clarifying the goals of this board, I mean, we'd be happy to do that if it's not clear. Because what the intent here, this is meant to go out, find things that are easy to do, that benefit companies, find if they work or not, come back and propose them. That's the intent. Things like effluent trading. And this is not meant to take on heavy-duty things. The board is, I think the board's fairly small, would meet periodically, but I don't want to give too much weight to this board. This is supposed to be a small think tank to go out and find non-regulatory ways to deal with things, so we don't have to deal with them through the regulatory way. That's what we want to do here. And if there are concerns that it will kind of take off on us and become a kind of a Frankenstein board, then I think perhaps what we could do is look at language that would get put in here that would alleviate those concerns. I'm not sure what it would be. But what we're looking for is a way to look at a market system as opposed to a regulatory system so much and get that started and rolling. Because that's where we'd like to go. And we don't know a better way to do it. And when we have put commissions and things together, they lock up, and that's why we put in the piece here saying that they can only propose positive incentives. That's all they can do. They can't propose negative incentives. Tried to build the safeguards in.
Representative Hayden.
Well, yeah. I think maybe you're right. I think maybe the problem's in the name.
Do you have something?
Because when you say that word, so many examples pop into your mind. For example, over this new millennium, fossil fuels are not sustainable. Coal, going to go away in 500 years. Natural gas. So do we declare them unsustainable and stop using them? Clearly not. nuclear power is clearly sustainable. Should we start using it? Maybe not. You know, so sustainability, timber clearly sustainable, but we're not using it. So yeah, you do get into the situation when you use the word of saying what is and what isn't, and then you have a whole hodgepodge of things that are sustainable you may not want to do and are unsustainable that you might want to do. Maybe you just need a better word. Thank you. I like the bill. You know, I like the concept. But you get into this discussion over sustainability.
We knew that would happen.
Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reality is, Sarah, once we establish something in government, it never goes away.
That's true.
Sadly, at times, I think. It is a laudable goal, and I do appreciate, truly, and John, I think you and I talked about this a long time ago as a good direction, and I think it is a good direction. I still have some uncomfortableness with what it could evolve into and what could be the, and forgive me for what-ifing, but it seems like every one of my bills that go in front of a state agency, in front of a committee, get what-if to death. So I'm going to what-if this so that I can try to grasp what would be the ultimate implications down the road. It's a great idea of cooperation. Where do we go from here?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, I'm a little hesitant to do this, but could I make a suggestion? And that might, if people are concerned about that, it might take off. We would not be opposed to a sunset. You know, try it, and if it works, then it keeps going. It has to prove itself. And if it doesn't, then it's gone. And we would not object to that for the board.
If I might just interject into the conversation here too, that we are all considering this to be an experiment, and quite frankly, there is distrust in the environmental community, and there's distrust in the natural resources community about putting this forum in motion. And this is a grand experiment, and it never has been viewed as anything but that. But it, I think, is an experiment that has the potential to change the context of the discussion to something that is more positive than the tools that we have in the toolbox already. And for that reason, I think it's very intriguing. I appreciate very much the cautiousness that the committee is bringing forward here, because I think that, my name's on the top of this bill.
I saw that.
And,
I swallowed hard.
I have we been very cautious in watching the bill be drafted and my role in this. John and I have taken huge sections out of this bill that I have been very uncomfortable with. And definitely look at this as being an experiment. But I think that we're at a place here in our understanding of what it's going to take. And I keep coming up with this diagram that actually I got from you, Senator Farioli, that defines sustainability to me. And what it is that you take the ecological issues and the social issues and the economic issues, and you find the place where those three circles intersect and where there's a common interest. And that's where you build on. You build on that area. And that's what the board is. The board is an attempt to find a way to integrate the environmental needs with the needs of business and the economy and the needs of communities and the social fabric to remain strong. And instead of saying, if you don't do this, we're going to fine you, or if you don't do this, you can't build, let's start focusing on ways to integrate those things so that it's worthwhile for people to consider the economic implications, to consider the social implications, and consider the environmental implications. And that's where we tried to go with this. I mean, it is a great leap of faith to get there. But I think that if we want to try to get out of the regulatory box and the kind of do it or we're going to beat you over the head or sanction you in some way, that we've got to be willing to take a chance on something like this. And I'm very sensitive to the need to put sideboards on it so that we don't create a monster that drags us to a place that we don't want to go. But I see this as the way to continue the kind of leading edge attitudes that Oregonians have and that we've tried to foster with the Oregon Plan and with those kinds of things that combine the economic and the social and the ecological values together to make it work for people that actually have to make a living on the ground. Representative Crum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What mechanism is within the language of the bill that provides for accountability of the board in terms of how you're spending your money, number one, fiscally? Number two is what are the goals of the board and how will those goals be measured so that if we did put a sunset on this and you come back to us in 4 years or whatever and say, here's what we've done, here's what we've recommended, this is how this has become good policy for Oregon, this is how this has benefited Oregon. What in here gives us that accountability as legislators in terms of making a decision on this?
Madam Chair, there are a couple of things. One is that one of the functions of the board is to put some accountability on the director and what they do, and that's why we have the board, and that's why it has to go through Senate approval. So it's, in a sense, the board's responsibility to make sure things get done. The other is, you know, frankly, some of these things right now, we don't know what we're going to find. I mean, we know there's a lot out there on sustainability practices or whatever you want to call it. We know, but you know, I can't say they're going to do 10 projects. They're going to do 15 projects. And right now we don't exactly know what the staffing will be. It'll be fairly small. They will report back to the legislature. There will be legislative oversight on it. If the committee's more comfortable with having a legislator serve on the committee, I mean, that's a possibility too. And certainly the board is responsible back to the legislature through financing and budget.
Well, Madam Chair, and
I have cut Representative Hanson off from having a comment inadvertently.
Okay, well, I'll defer to the good colleague from Halsey on questions of redundancy because I've served with him for 2 years, and I know he's the expert in this area. But I think there's a real niche that this could fill, and we may not know exactly what that niche is, but the concept of a think tank and development tax issues is real important. I mean, I question on sustainability. You know, every time I'm at a grocery store and they ask me plastic or paper, I mean, I'm weighing which is the most.
That's right.
And you can make a good case either way. Just some little things. If we could learn from private industry, who is experimenting on a lot of sustainability issues because they make good economic sense, and then learn those things and then transfer them to state government, there could be huge savings. An issue I've always wondered about. We do almost all of our purchasing on low bid, and how do you factor in, say, if it's a fleet car, paying a little more for a car that has a longer lifespan, of which would make incredibly good economic sense, but it also mean a lot less. If your fleet's turning over a little slower, you're using fewer natural resources. There's so much in so many questions of sustainability. To have a group that's primarily working as a think tank, investigating, playing with these ideas, and making some recommendations that we can learn from, I have no doubt that Oregonians will take those recommendations and act on them, because it just makes good business sense and good environmental sense. And I really don't see a downside, especially if there are fears on this. A sunset clause could answer that, but see how it works and how it develops and what the value is from
from it, and then see whether it needs to take the sunset off or make changes and get it focused on a little different area. But I think it's an area that we can learn a great deal from.
The Wise Use Committee
doesn't.
The Representative Nolan, did you have a comment? No.
Madam Chair, I'm still not comfortable that I've had my question answered as to where in the language of the bill is there accountability for the board, and what goals are you going to accomplish, and why should we keep it in existence later on down the road? Why should any succeeding legislature say, yeah, we think this is a good idea and you should continue?
Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, the purpose of the report to the legislature is to answer that. And I think that's what's frankly going to have to happen, because this is experimental. They're going to go out and see what's there. And I think what's going to have to happen, frankly, is they're going to do these, bring this stuff back to the legislature, bring back a report, and then ultimately the legislature is going to have to say, we think this is a worthwhile thing to do or not. It's very difficult to put objective criteria on something like this. Like, you'll do 20 projects, or you'll do 10 projects. I mean, we could form something like that up. I don't know if it would be the best way to approach it or not. I mean, I'd be happy to explore that with you.
Well, Madam Chair and Johnny, it may not be. You may be absolutely right. One of the things that I guess that scares me about a lot of what we do in government, and not just this, but Endangered Species Act, no one's defined what recovery is. And right. How does that relate? No one's defined what recovery really means of the Willamette River when we clean it up. We don't know what that means yet. Right. So I, you know, in deference to the good representative and his E-Trade account, one of the things I learned about trading stocks is that always know your exit. Know at what price you're going to get out, either up or down. Okay. And I'm concerned we don't know where there's an exit here. Maybe there shouldn't be an exit is the point. But in so many other issues that are in front of us in terms of policy, we don't have an exit. We don't know what the exit strategy is. We don't know what the finality of these policy issues are. And they go on and on and on. And do they really accomplish the goals for which we hope that they would? So those, I think, need to be considerations as you develop the amendments and so forth.
Representative Krupp, would a sunset clause take care of your concerns in that area, so that there would be a point in time where it would need to be reevaluated and then actually reauthorized?
Yes, Madam Chair. That would be very helpful in I think, getting at the role of, or the real issue for me is accountability, and is this good policy, and have we done anything good by doing this?
The other thing that we may want to consider is to consider this kind of a pilot project, that this is an experiment. Because it is a huge departure from the way that state policy has taken place in the past.
Well, again, Madam Chair, I like the direction. I think it's a good direction of cooperation to solve these issues that become so contentious. Just want to make sure that we don't create that 800-pound gorilla.
And Madam Chair, Representative Krupp, I think one the other thing about that a sunset does is it is a great motivator to do well.
Representative Hayes.
And Madam, if that amendment could be drafted in such a way as it would apply to all state agencies, I think that would be good. And just a modest proposal, John, you know, if instead of, you know, curing the world, if you could just figure out the best, if this committee could figure out the best way to deal with those messy cans that we have to return to stores, you know, keep it simple.
Representative Krieger.
Madam Chair,
it's going to be hard to follow.
I still have a little problem with part of this, in that you had your little circles, which is the environmental, economic, and social, which we heard about clear from the governor when he talked about sustainability, year and a half, 2 years ago when I was on the Board of Forestry. But when you really get down to it, what is it we're trying to sustain? What are you trying to measure? Protect clean air, clean water. But you're going to be doing that through looking at commercial fish, agriculture, and timber. That's the three mediums of things that you're really going to be looking at that are the concern of people that are going to have these other things happen. But then when you go and look at the makeup of the board, the very people who are going to be regulated, again, aren't there.
And that is one of the issues that needs to be dealt with by amendment. Before we close, what I'd like to do, too, is just talk a little bit more about the Institute for Natural Resources at Oregon State University, because that's the kind of the third leg of the stool that we're building here. And I want to try to talk to you a bit about why this is important to me to have this in the bill. And I think that those of us that have worked on natural resource issues and the fish recovery issues and water quality and air quality issues here in the legislature have time and time again run up against the problem of the lack of verifiable data, and second of all, the inability to get at what is actually there and be able to look at it in a meaningful kind of way. And one of the problems that we've got is that we've got pieces of our database scattered all over the place. Water Resources has a database, the Land Use Planning System has a database, the GIS system has a database, and the Department of Ag has a database. They're all over, and they're all in, they're all separate from each other. So there isn't any way that you could, for instance, look at a specific geographic place in the state of Oregon and look down through all the available data layers to get a picture of what we actually know about that place. And I know that particularly as we've been working our way in the interim through the 1010 planning, implementing the 1010 water quality plans for the agriculture community, that one of the frustrating things that those people have experienced is the lack of data and the difficulty of accessing the data that relates to water quality. And the vision here is to create a place to have this data coordinated so that it's available to people in a way that's accessible and meaningful. And we looked and talked about this a great deal in the interim. And one of the reasons that we chose OSU for this is that they're outside of the organization of state government, and there's a high level of trust in their ability and their integrity to keep this information. And we're looking at it from the point of view of the agriculture community going through the problems that they're going through with the water quality management plans, that there is through the Agricultural Extension Service a lead-in to the Oregon State University system through that, and there's a trust level that's been developed with that community over the years. Using OSU to do this, I think, gives us opportunities in several different ways. Another thing is that it gives us access to a vast army of undergraduate students who have a great knowledge of how computer systems work and would make this be the leading edge technological thing that I certainly envision it to be. And I do think that as we go down the path of doing the TMDLs and doing the recovery plans for the fish that we have listed in the state and trying to deal with all of the other environmental challenges that we're going to face, that we're going to be making much better policy decisions if we have the data there in a format that's easy to use and understandable. The holes in the data are going to be much more apparent to us, and what's true and what's not true by what the data actually says is going to be much more apparent to us. And that's the vision that I have for the Institute for Natural Resources.
Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to, if I may, I'd speak with Senator Ferrioli and Dukes and maybe some of the other members of the committee and talk about putting in some language. And we wanted something on PANS, was it? Returning PANS?
Cans.
Oh, returning cans.
Of the market.
Okay, well,
right.
Big thing with your members.
And try to get something ginned up and brought back to you that will address these.
I would appreciate your efforts. And colleagues, just kind of in closing this, are we taking a chance here? Yeah, we're taking a big chance. So let's build in some comfort levels to this if it's the decision of the committee to go ahead on this. But I think that this opens some windows that need to be opened in the discussion, and it enlarges the field of possibilities about what we can do to have a reasoned and fact-based discussion about where the best direction to go is to protect the environmental considerations in the state, to protect the economic considerations in the state, and to protect the social considerations. And if there is no further discussion on this bill, I will close the public hearing and ask Mr. Rocco to come forward with the all-important information on the schedule. And just to let you know that your good chair and your committee staff went to the wall for you on the Saturday session.
Madam Chair, members, at this time, there's no meeting scheduled for tomorrow or Saturday of the subcommittee, and the next likely meeting would be Monday, and we'll let you know what would be on the agenda. It's not settled at this point, but I will try to figure something out on Saturday for Monday.
And also, members, I urge you very strongly to enjoy your free time on Friday and Saturday and ask you for the next 3 or 4 weeks to not schedule any other activities during any of the committee times, and also please include Saturdays on that.
3 or 4 weeks?
4 weeks. See how we hang on your every word, Madam Chair?
I don't like the sound of that.
Four?
No.
Weeks?
At all.
What's this 22nd business I keep hearing? No way.
I already told him that.
Mr. Rocco.
Madam Chair, this committee is fully capable of running 10 bills a meeting.
Yeah.
Yes, we could, by golly.
If we only had them.
There will be a full time.
Thank you.
Our fate's in our own hands.
And if we could keep senators.
How? How?